All right, fine. I'll be a gracious host. How you doing?
Little Mermaid is the scariest Disney movie by far, though.
Why the hell is Ace Blade in your Kickstarter?
Some comics. I'm getting controversial today. We're gonna get controversial today with
my proudest moment is this interview and being able to talk to you too.
What's funny? What is it?
I'm laughing at the message that we just did. Hey. I'm like, yeah, I did.
Good. But we got it done, though. That's what's important.
That's my bad. All right. Let's do this properly. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Taurus Comics, in collaboration with Fourth Wall Productions, respectfully brings to you the 83rd episode of the Four Tales podcast. I'm your host, Kyron Silva from Taurus Comics. Across the way is a Violet Stringer of Ace Blade, Danny J. Quick, and together we are your two award-winning Blurred comic creators here to help you find your next favorite comic. We are live on Facebook, Twitter, I'm not calling it X, YouTube, and Twitch. So if you are listening or watching us live, thank you for being part of this, because all your interactions help us reach a bigger and brighter audience. But don't forget to like, subscribe, and review this show so we can, you know, reach out to new people. Now, if you want to support us financially, go to our website, fourtalespodcast.com, buy some merchandise, buy us a coffee, you know, do what you can, because we do this for free, but, you know, we'd like to be compensated a little bit for that. I just realized I have my Bluetooth still in. Fish Lee is in the building. No, you did not miss the show. We actually are doing a special time because our guest requested it, and Danny was like, okay, I will miss out spending time with my family again.
That's not even how this happened at all. Our guest said, can we do it at 11? And I said, yes, I've been trying to tell Kyron for months that we should move the time of the show. And, you know, here we are. So,
and literally you say that, and then I say, okay, what time works best for you, Danny? And you never say anything.
10 a.m. 10 a.m. works best for me.
That's the time that we do it. So
but I'm willing to change it to any other time, though. I'm just being honest. 10 a.m. works best for me, but I'll be willing to change it.
Anyways.
Accommodate my co-hosts and our guests.
Fish says he saw you on live on TikTok and the time zone got me messed up. Oh. So you saw Danny, but you didn't see me live? Wait, what?
We were both live. We were live together.
You're right, Marvin. West Coast for life. That's right.
Don't be throwing up gang signs on the show. We're trying to get sponsors. Can't be doing that.
Oh, wait, hold on. I used to be able to throw up the blood symbol with my hands, but arthritis got me kicking my ass right now.
Let's not do that.
I'm just telling the truth. I used to be able to throw up the blood sign.
Let's not get demonetized on YouTube for this already.
All right, my bad. All right, Mr. Quick, how's your week, dude?
Doing pretty good, brother. How you been, man? I got some good comic books this week. Hope you did.
I did. I got this amazing comic book called Ka, the Mighty Cro-Magnon.
Yes.
Fantastic series. I got my copy.
I got mine too this week.
Okay.
I'm gonna do a YouTube. I mean a TikTok. I got a couple of them. But I did go to the comic book store. I got number one.
Okay.
Wait, number one, I got the Creed book.
Wait, there's a Creed comic? See that? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, Creed the Next Round. It's about his, it's, I want to say, 6 years after the events of the last movie. And then I was also told that I should pick this up. Superman, The Last Days of Lex Luthor.
Okay. Because so I do want to be honest and admit I have not seen a Creed movie yet. Not one of them.
Have you watched the Rocky movies?
Yes, I have. Ask me if I remember any of them. No.
That's terrible.
I don't think I've seen the last two Rocky movies. Specifically, the most recent one was a Balboa. I haven't saw that one.
And that was actually good. Rocky Balboa was like top three Rocky movies.
Boxing never got me anywhere. It's just never pulled me in, dude.
That's why he's a Kings fan. Anyways, would you like to would you like to introduce our guest? Because you cannot disrespect the Rocky and Creed movies. That's your assignment for this week. You had Cinnamon Life cereal last week. This is going to be your assignment this week. Watch all of the Rocky and Creed movies.
Okay, I'll do that while I cry about my Kickstarter. So, all right. Okay.
Speaking of Kickstarter, we have a wonderful guest coming on if you would like to introduce her.
No, go ahead. You already started, so go ahead.
No. You got thing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, the one and only Catherine Calamia is
How's it going, guys?
Doing good, man. How are you? It's good to see you.
Wait, Rocky had
pet turtles? When did this happen?
What pet turtles?
Rocky has pet turtles.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about the Rocky movies. I'm sorry, y'all.
That's a running thing. Pray for Kyron. Hey, Kat, how you been?
I'm doing well. I've seen at least one Creed movie, so I'll give myself that.
Okay, I'll just leave.
you're doing better than Kyron, then. That's just a mess.
The last one was good. I watched just the third one. I didn't need to watch the other two, and I knew what was going on. So,
okay, yeah. Can I say one of the bigger reasons why I didn't watch the Creed movies? Because I didn't want my wife seeing Michael B. Jordan half naked, sweating, and glistening.
That's understandable.
I just felt like she'd look at me and be like, damn it. Just say it.
We can all admire Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, trust me, I do. I'm like, damn it, man.
It was a solid movie too. So I just think you should check it out. But welcome to the show, Kat. Would you give us a quick introduction for our viewers and tell them who you are, what you're doing, how long you've been doing comics and all that good stuff?
I've been doing comics for a long time. I want to say 5+ years writing them. And then I started with doing YouTube videos, being a comic book critic. I wrote for places like IGN, DC Comics, and Newsarama, Read Pops, Pop First. So I did a lot of journalism in the past. But you guys probably know me most by doing Kickstarters. I've been on the Kickstarter Council. I've worked on books like Fall Like Daughter, The Dancer, Slice of Life. And currently, we have a pretty big Kickstarter on the platform, Beast and Snow, which is by far one of our best Kickstarters. Our best Kickstarter date was By Visibility, which had 1,300 backers in its whole span. And now Beast and Snow has been live for like 5 days, and we're at 1,000, almost 100 backers. So it's doing pretty well.
1,078 exactly at this moment. So yep. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
Amazing work.
So what got you into comics? Like, what was there a specific comic book? Was there a series that you saw on movie, TV? Like, what's got you saying, I want to be a part of this crazy world that we call comic books?
I feel like it's a little bit of everything. My dad was really into comics when I was younger. So he would like read Superman comics to me, DC books. And then in second grade, I watched the Spider-Man movie for the first time. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I want to read more. So I picked up my own Spider-Man books. Like, my dad would go on eBay and he'd buy his DC books. And I'd buy Spider-Man. Then, you know, the cartoons influenced me. X-Men Evolution, also Batman the Anime series. And I would say fourth, fifth grade, I go to the comic book store, pick up backup issues. And then like eighth grade, I got a pull list and never looked back. And I've been reading comics weekly since then.
Okay, I just feel really old because she said in second grade, the Spider-Man movie came out. And I'm thinking that was 2002.
It was 2002. I'm 28 and that came out in second grade for me.
Son of a mother.
That's wild.
I'm like, I was an adult when that came out.
I just got a pull list for the first time like 2 years ago. Cause
oh, damn, that's cool though. Start whenever. Yeah, I mean,
it's cool, but shoot, like there's so many people like Kyron and Javon who is always in our comments. I think you recently just met Javon at Riffacon, and they're like always talking about, you know, reading comics, you know, for a long time and going to the comic book stores, and I'm like, I feel like a rookie in the game. I've been making comic books just as long as I've been reading comics. So it's crazy.
It doesn't matter when you start, right? Just got to start at some point.
Absolutely. So I know you. I know you from our shared experiences with a previous publisher at Short Fuse. That's where I ran into Like Father, Like Daughter, which became one of my favorite favorite series. And then also They Call Her Dancer. We actually met at Baltimore Comic Con a few years ago.
We did. And
that's when I coined the phrase cat mode.
I'm sorry.
And I love it. I'm going to use it on my resume, I promise.
Wait, okay, wait, what is cat mode? Because I'm not familiar with this.
Cat mode is, so I don't know. Listen, everybody has different styles when they go to conventions of selling and interacting with people.
Yes, mine's is the please buy my book. I feel pity for me. Please buy my book.
Cat mode is this like eighth gear that Cat goes into when it's time to sell comic books. She is an amazing salesperson. She just jumps in and kills it. I want to say like 80% of the sales that we got that weekend were because of her. Damn. And we sold a lot of books that weekend too.
Okay.
Kat was there, Daniel Calvin, Morgan Iverson, Sean Mack was there.
Damn, just name dropping.
Good weekend. Yeah, it was a good weekend.
It was a good weekend. And you know, I coined the term cat mode that weekend because I was like, I need to be able to do that. I need to be able to get into this kind of gear. Where did that like the salesmanship come from? Like, how did you develop that kind of thing?
That's a good question. Like I said, I bought a lot of comics on eBay, so I feel like maybe that was the start of it all. But yeah, I think it's just for the passion of comics. I really love them. So when I'm starting to sell, I want to give that passion to as many people as possible and kind of just go in that gear and try to be as friendly as possible and just try to talk about comics and what I love in a passionate way. And a lot of times it works and I'm happy I could be a good salesman because it kind of helps the comic side and the writing side to get people to buy on both like Kickstarter and in person.
For sure.
Now on your current Kickstarter, you're working with Phil Falco. Is that?
Yeah.
How big is it to have a partner to help you in situations with, you know, making a Kickstarter, producing it, marketing? Like, how big is it to have other people just be there with you to help support it?
So big. Yeah, I started teaming up with Phil. He's my business partner about 2 years ago, I want to say, maybe like a year and a half ago. And he had his book Haunting, and I guess backtracking, we were friends in college. Like, I had a mutual friend that he went to grammar school with, and she invited him to go have lunch. And then I was there also. We hung out and like gradually became friends. And then I want to say 5 years later, like we met first year of college, and then after college, we started hanging out a little bit more. We went to go see movies with each other. And then he finally said, hey, I want to make a comic. And I said, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. Why didn't you say anything? It's like, oh, I didn't know like how to bring it up. But I want to make comics. Do you have any advice? And he made his own comic, Haunting, and he did really well with it. And we're like, oh, wouldn't it be, we would give scripts to each other, like, because we liked each other's writing. I was like, oh, you want to read this, and you want to read this. And then we realized, oh, we liked each other's writing a lot, so why don't we do a crossover together? And we live in the same area, so we go and we did Haunting and like Like Daughter crossover. It kind of changed the game. It was the quickest script we ever wrote, and it was just so much fun to write together. So we're like, oh, we really want to do a webtoon. Let's write Slice of Life together. That could be like our next project and do a webtoon. And then we realized like this is something magical. We should do most of our comics. We still have our solo books and we still work on some of our solo projects, but for the most part, we work together. Like Beast of Snow, we co-wrote, and the rest is history. And going back to your answer, your question of how it's a game changer. It really is a game changer because you have another person to bounce stuff off of. You have another person that can help you out. The reason we're able to release like a monthly Kickstarter is because there's two of us. I don't think we'd be able to do it if there's one. But like, you know, one of us could be creating the page. The other person could be, you know, going on a podcast. So it's very helpful to have two people.
All right. Yes. All right, Danny, you can join. You can join Taurus Comics if you want and help me out, you know.
Absolutely. I've been trying to get on. I've been trying to get on for 2 years now. Why do you think I do this show? What's the saying? They say many hands make light work. So that's absolutely wonderful. And, you know, me and Morgan and Kyron and, you know, we all chip in and work together on projects. And that absolutely helps to be able to have somebody to at least bounce ideas off of. And that can, you know, give you an honest critique on things. So absolutely, teamwork makes the dream work.
I totally agree.
I thought you were leading into something with that statement. I thought it was going to be a question following that.
You have been working. We've been doing this podcast long enough that you know I'm just going to drop off at certain points.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
I'm going to say stuff and it's just going to end right there. You should know by now.
Okay, then let's talk about your current Kickstarter, The Beast in Snow number one. What is it all about? Who would like that? You know, give us all the details that you can without spoiling anything. Danny wants you to spoil the entire book. I'm not going to let you do that. So
yeah.
I already backed it. So I can.
Thank you.
It doesn't matter. I'm in there.
Yeah, no spoilers, but it's about it. We wanted to do a retelling of Beauty and the Beast and Snow White, and we wanted to tell a queer story because we have a fan base for that. So we're like, oh, why not tell a queer narrative? And, you know, why not throw in some werewolves and vampires? And we wanted to do a not safe for work book. They tend to do very well on Kickstarter, if I'm being completely honest. But we also wanted to tell a not safe for work book that has a story. That was a big part of what we wanted to do because that's our brand. We love character-driven stories. So we wanted to do a Game of Thrones kind of styled narrative. So it's not just like sex for the sake of having sex, but it's
You said that right when I scrolled to this part of this.
And you know, there's a story to it, but yeah, there's all, it's really reliant to their characters, and you'll, as you read it, you'll see what their narrative's about. But yeah, we want to tell a character driven sex driven story, and we love the art. We love the storytelling here. And yeah, it's cool that we got to write a fantasy book too, because I'm actually not usually a huge fantasy fan. So I wanted to challenge myself and be like, how can I tell a fantasy story that I'd actually like? Of course, it's very grounded. And like I said, it's very much about how these characters navigate with each other, but mostly Snow. She's kind of the main character of this issue. So she is a people pleaser, and she died being a people pleaser. Now that she's a vampire, she doesn't want to be a people pleaser anymore. But of course, sometimes you can't turn that off, and that's a big part of the story. But yeah, that's all I could say from the plot before I spoil anything. But yeah, that's kind of how it came to fruition. We wanted to tell a public domain story. We're like, why not Beauty and Beast and Snow White? We saw what does well on Kickstarter, and we're like, well, how can we make a story that does well on Kickstarter and make it our own and make a universe that we really like. And that's how it came about. And it was a fun challenge because a lot of times we'll start with maybe like a character. We're like, oh, I really want to tell this type of character. This time we started with like, no, we want to tell this type of story, this type of plot, and kind of work backwards.
Nice. Yeah. I like that. So has your time with Kickstarter on the Kickstarter mm-hmm. Council kind of helped you to know what projects do well on Kickstarter, or is that more of just like an advisor role? Because you had a lot of success before being on a council also. So has one informed the other more or less?
I think the advisory council informed differently. It was definitely more about like the nitty gritty of Kickstarter, of like how Kickstarter works and how do you improve the platform as just a, you know, a user or just as a creator. So I don't know if it was very much of like, oh, this is what these projects do really well on Kickstarter. We didn't really talk about that, but I would say, yeah, being a consultant really helped. And also just seeing what is on Kickstarter. I think if you ever want to be a successful Kickstarter creator or successful in anything, look at what the landscape is. You look at what does well and why did it do well and what does badly and why that did badly. And I think that really helps you overall. Being a consultant really helps to be like, okay, this person did this and this is how they turned out if they changed this or they did this. These type of stories sell really well on Kickstarter, but this type of story could sell well on Kickstarter if you did this. Like, honestly, I always say this, superheroes are really, really hard to sell on Kickstarter just because you have a whole market, Marvel and DC. They tend not to go to Kickstarter for superheroes, but it depends on how you depends on your thumbnail, depends on your art, depends on how you sell that superhero book. Because I felt like Daughter, like I didn't expect to get like 500 backers on that last campaign. I was like, okay, it's going to get like 400 backers or 300 backers. And it blew it out of the water. Like it did really, really well because we had a good thumbnail. Obviously it's, you know, I think it's a good story. And yeah, it's just the way you promote yourself. I say you can have any product, but if you promote it correctly, like you could you can make gangbusters of numbers. So, but yeah, also just kind of see what are the trends of what does well on Kickstarter, and that'll help you as well.
You know, I realized something you said earlier made a lot of sense to me too. You were talking about doing an NSFW book, but having story involved, right? So right. I back a lot of Kickstarters, but I've never backed a not safe for work book before. I got small children in the house, family super religious and stuff like that. So I've never backed one. This is actually the first one that I've backed. And I know that it's because I trust you as a storyteller. I know that you're a great writer first and foremost. And then also, you know, like you said, it's public domain. Those are the characters that I know. And then, I know it's just not gratuitous just for the sake of, you know what I'm saying? So all of those factors went into my decision to actually back this book. So kudos to you and the team, man. I think it's great.
Now, that means a lot.
But Danny then also mentions that he backed it on his second account, so his wife can't see that he backed it. he had it sent to Morgan's house, so that way he doesn't come here.
Hey, however
we got to do it.
Okay. Well, I do want to talk about the success you had with Kickstarter. At what point was it that you launched a Kickstarter and you said, damn it, I can do this? Like, what was the first time you really sat there and said, yeah, I can really make this something with Kickstarter or with just comic books?
I think there was multiple times. I think the first time individually where I was like, oh, this is doing really well, was actually the Dancer issue one. We had a really good thumbnail for that one. And that we made like 500 backers. And I was first time I made 500 backers. I was like, oh, okay, this could be really cool. And then I think the next step was Buy Visibility, where I made a bisexual anthology. And that, again, got like 1,300 backers. And that really like changed my whole career of, first of all, we did more queer comics. But also, I mean, having 1,300 backer campaign was kind of crazy and put myself on the radar of Kickstarter. So and being friendly with the people of Kickstarter, which really, really helped. And then as time went on, I think my partnership with Phil really changed things, because we both just try to level up together and try to challenge each other. So, and then deciding to do monthly Kickstarters really changed a lot. And then this, I think I'm kind of living it right now. This changed a whole lot. I just like that first day of doing this Kickstarter, like obviously we do a lot of Kickstarters, so I don't expect like people will just randomly message me and be like, oh, look what you're doing on this Kickstarter, because we do a lot, you know. But this one in particular, there's a lot of people messaged and I was like, oh wow, okay, a lot of people are seeing this. And sometimes you work in a bubble a lot, and it was lucky enough that I did a couple of panels at San Diego. I did a panel with Jimmy Palmiotti and Brian Polito. And I think that like it gave like, oh my, this is legit. And I having that panel and then a week later launching this, it's just been kind of a roller coaster, to be honest.
You got a little bit of rub from the Palmiottis and all those. Okay. I need to be on more panels is what I'm hearing.
Panels definitely help. It helps bring community, you know. I definitely recommend it. Lucky enough, I've been invited to a lot of these panels, but I think now being invited on the panels, we're like, oh, maybe we should like actually try putting some panels together too. So maybe we'll do that next year with our long schedule. But no, I've been really grateful that, you know, Kickstarter has invited me to do stuff. I did a signing there at their booth, which was really cool. But then also just making friends in this community. One of the other panels I did was for queer anthology, and we all just kind of became friends over the years, and it was just a wonderful panel to do that. So, yeah, I think all the small things kind of bring big things. And it's been a roller coaster ride.
Sorry, Danny's like staring off into space and it's throwing me off. I don't know if he's frozen or not. So
I was looking at the Kickstarter page, actually. But
okay.
Hey, man, a good thing to be looking at.
Journey, man. The whole journey has just been great. Like, it's great to see creators, you know, kind of, I have this whole philosophy from years ago to build horizontally instead of vertically. So sure. yes, it's always good to, you know, reach up to celebrities and things like that to you know, to build with and try to connect with. But most of the people that we are going to be working with are, you know, right here on the same level with us. So it's great to see, you know, you and Phil just working together and doing different things. And I've seen your vacation pics and like I saw y'all went to the that's gonna be part of my quick takes, but okay. You know, the Michael Jordan picture that you took, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. Even though I'm a LeBron James guy, you know, I love Mike too, so that's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm just off the heels of watching The Last Dance, so I was just like, I gotta go. We treated ourselves because like, oh, we'll always go to Comic Cons and we always should be like really cheap about it and go to like McDonald's or something. And we're like, no, let's actually treat ourselves and like go somewhere nice. And when's the next opportunity to go to the Michael Jordan restaurant? So we took the opportunity to do that.
So we know that you're killing it right now with Beasts and Snow, but can you give us any information as far as upcoming projects that we should maybe be on the lookout for?
So right after this, we are following up with our ongoing books. Phil is going to be launching his Haunting series. So that's a series that he writes on his own. And then I am finishing up The Dancer. It's been a long time coming. So this is the last issue of The Dancer. It's funny because the Life Valley Daughter, I was able to promote it as like, it's the grand finale, but I do plan on continuing that in a different way and just doing another series. But those characters, if you read issue 8, you'll find out why, I'm kind of changing stuff up for that one. But, you know, I said grand finale, Life Valley Daughter, but really it's just the grand finale of that origins. The Dancer is over. Like, this is like the final four. I mean, you never know if I'll come back with it, but there's nothing in the works. There's no issue being done. This is the last issue of that book. So that's coming up. We have obviously more Slice of Life. You know, there's obviously going to be more Beasts and Snow. We'll be working on that as well and maybe stuff in that vein. But yeah, the thing to look forward to next is right after this, 2 weeks after Beasts and Snow, we'll have Haunting and The Dancer. So we're really excited about that.
2 weeks. How are you able to handle that right after?
I know. We don't take a break. No. Yeah, that's true, though. That's,
no, it doesn't sound like it. Like, I'm drained right now doing my Kickstarter. I don't know how you can do it just right away.
Yeah, we built it into our schedule where we like to do Kickstarters every, so we take a 2 week break and then we do another Kickstarter. And what helps is like, let's say The Dancer and Haunting, we have a lot of those assets already. So it's a pretty easy Kickstarter to put together. That book's been done for a really long time. So in that regard, it's pretty easy to put together. And then our promotion is pretty similar every single time. So like this, we've like heavily promoted. Like, we made a lot of flyers. We obviously went to San Diego. We're going to go to FlameCon next weekend, which is a Comic-Con in New York. And we'll be passing out flyers there. But for like a Dancer and Haunting, we're not going to be making new flyers or anything. We're going to, you know, just be promoting the book in the way it is. So, you know, big campaigns like this, there's a lot of energy that goes into it because it's a new franchise. We had to get new banners. We had to like figure out, okay, what's the log line? A Dancer and Haunting, it's a little bit easier. So we try to schedule in a way where sometimes we do two in a month, which is kind of crazy. Well, we are technically, because Haunting is on Phil's thing, on mine's The Dancer. So I would say the hardest part is fulfillment. That's really the hardest part of doing so many Kickstarters, more than putting it together. Because again, having two people really helps. We both put the page together, so not just one. But fulfillment, this fulfillment is going to be interesting.
1,000 of those, yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. Fulfillment is always that thing, yeah.
Okay. Well, I do want to go to a non-comic related question real quick, because I know Danny's ready for his quick takes. But I saw recently that you went and saw Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Yes.
And I want to know, which one did you like better?
That's tough, because I think as just a fan, I like Barbie more because I like had a more fun time with that. But I really, as a like film person, I really liked Oppenheimer. Like, I just thought, like, I mean, they both are really good movies. And obviously, like, Barbie is like a really fun visual film. But Oppenheimer, there's just so many like little things they did that you wouldn't notice. Like, the way they deal with sound was really interesting. Obviously, the visuals. It was 3 hours, so maybe that was a notch down. No, it was a little long, but
am I the only one that's noticed a lot of movies recently have been extending their time more and more? Like, it used to be an hour, 45 minutes was a long movie, and now we hope for a 2-hour movie.
No, oh, yeah. I definitely noticed. We go to the, we have AMC stubs, so we tend to go to the movies a lot. Because really, we gotta make sure we're seeing the two movies a month to make it worth it. But we definitely noticed. And what's really fun about horror movies, because we really love horror movies, is that they tend not be 2 hours. They tend to be like the hour and a half. We're like, thank God. you know, like we you saw... Yeah,
you don't want to see 3 hours of people getting slashed up, huh? That's
what we'd... you know, I think if it was like, I think Halloween was about 3 hours, and that showed you Halloween the End. You know, maybe you don't need a 3 hour movie about Michael Myers. But no, we love slashers. We love all type of horror movies, and those tend to be a little shorter. We want to see that starts with T, Take Something, Take Me Somewhere. We want to go see that movie. But then, like, some of the cartoons are short, too. I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is short, and that's getting good reviews. I'd like to go see that. But because of this Pixar, we haven't had time. Yeah, Spider-Verse is very long. But that was the one movie where I was like, I wanted it to be long. So
that's very true. That one was definitely worth the runtime.
And Into the Spider-Verse is my favorite movie of all time. So I'm like, I was very, very excited about that. And I don't tend to get very excited about movies. And even my friends are like, guys, we have to go see it. Like, one of my friends was graduating the next day, and she's like, I know, we got to go see this movie, because Kat's not excited about movies very often. So let's go. She's been talking about this for a long time.
I love it.
All right. You ready for quick takes?
I'm ready.
All right. So for those who are watching, you know, if you don't know what quick takes are, quick takes is a rapid fire Q&A session where we grill our guests on the hard-hitting questions of their past, future, and no, it's not that at all. But we're gonna have fun with it. All right, I'm ready, Kyron, whenever you are. Quick takes. I said I was ready, and then I don't even have my list up. It's like, wow, did I even prepare for the show?
No, but I'm used to it now. You don't prepare, so I'm used to it.
I at least had the questions ready before the show started this time. Okay. All right. We talked a little bit about this earlier, Kat. So from a creator, a lot of people on TikTok have been asking me, you know, how I actually had a really deep dive into, you know, working here at the studio all the time and making comic books. And then, you know, we got four kids and I got a wife who has a business. And somebody asked me, you know, how do you balance all of that? So I know you're one of the hardest working people in comic books. And I see you are always working. So what are your thoughts on how to balance work and play?
Allowing yourself to take a break and feeling okay with it. This is quick, so I shouldn't go too long, but one of our friends said take a break for a day after this campaign, and I said, yeah, we should. So I'm taking the day off after this campaign. And yeah, I think just mixing in a little fun, like the Michael Jordan restaurant's a great example of that.
Absolutely. I love it. Okay. So number two, like we talked about earlier, the Buy Visibility campaign was a huge smash. It was crazy. And one thing I realized around that time is that not only social media, but content is becoming more focused on groups of people, right? For the Buy Visibility campaign, and all,
you can,
and
say,
all
it, your you can say it, it's okay.
I know my mouth doesn't do things like I want them to do. Creators who are creating projects, how would you explain the connection with the Buy Visibility campaign and niche audiences?
It's so important. Niche for any content, like you said, like you're doing a YouTube channel, instead of honestly doing a review on Barbie, maybe do something on like Nimona or something like that, where it was like a big movie in its niche, but it's not Barbie where everyone's talking about it. Buy Visibility is the same. You could have done just queer comics, but you would have maybe hit too many people. With Buy Visibility, you're hitting a certain demographic, a certain type of queer person. And I think that really helped for its success.
Yeah, okay. I like that. We got to get even more niche because the algorithms, I think help with stuff like that. I think because social media knows us so well, they can get the things to the right people that we are, you know, that we're looking for a lot of times.
I agree.
Okay. So question number three, and this is one that we ask a lot of our guests, and you do a lot of conventions, so you'll have some insight on this one. big cons or small shows, and why? Which one do you prefer?
For me, I honestly enjoy bigger conventions. You do have more of an audience. You can make more money. But there is something to be said about small conventions as well, because you get to do something for your community and you get to learn about your comics community. Honestly, like New Dorp Comic Con was a great example, where it's at a high school and we did really well at sales, but also is like helping our community and our direct community. So I think if you're a newer creator just trying to get your feet wet, do a small con, because you should just test out the waters. But if you've done a lot, test out that big show and split a table, because that definitely helps.
Definitely split a table, because them things get expensive.
Yeah. Don't do it just yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, great answer. All right, so question number four, and this is one that we bring for creators who have multiple IPs, multiple characters that they love. And I know you just said that one of yours is coming to an end, so I might already know the answer to this question. So of all the content that you've created, all the characters that you made, say you had the opportunity to just work on one of your IP for the rest of your life, but you had to give up all the rest of them. Which IP would you keep forever and why?
I think we'd say Slice of Life, just because it is both me and Phil's. We work on it a lot. We love these characters. And also we get feedback right away because it's on Webtoon. So yeah, it's also, I would say, our like most known property. Like when we go to Comic Cons, no matter what Comic Con, there's at least one or two people who are like, "You're the Slice of Life. I've seen that before. Like I read it. Like I'm subscribed." So yeah, I go with Slice of Life. But close second is like Folly Daughter, because that has a special place in my heart.
Oh, I love that. Okay, that's awesome. I thought you would have said like Father Like Daughter, but yeah, okay.
All right. Again, close second. I think if it, you know, because it's me and Phil's baby, I had to go with Slice of Life. But like Folly Daughter is a close second.
I love it. Okay. So question number five. I keep saying that we do another show, because Kyren is always in the comments, at least. He's
I watch all while I make dinner. That's what it is.
Right.
So, I like it.
We do a top five live where we usually ask, where we do a top five list every week. So on this show, I like to have our guests do a top five list off the top of their heads. And I know what your number one should probably be, but I'm going to ask you your top five crowdfunding sites.
All right. Is there five? Number one, obviously, is Kickstarter. Number two, I think Zoop is an interesting place for sure. Number three, I know Crowdfunder is doing stuff. They're trying to, I'll do number three, Backrocket. Number three should be Backrocket. Number four, I'll say, is Crowdfunder. I mean, I know there's Indiegogo, but I don't really want to put them on the list.
It looks like you're fighting it so hard to not put them on there.
I don't really want to put Indiegogo on the list, but I guess if I have to, they're number five.
Oh, I like that. I like, so Zoop is coming up very quickly. Yeah. I've seen a lot of creators using that. And I thought about doing a campaign on there myself, to be honest. But I haven't really looked into the platform like that. I've only backed, I want to say, one project on there. So
they're still relatively newer. I think if you're going to use Zoop, I recommend it for a project you kind of already did a Kickstarter for. So maybe like a Second Life type project where you're like, oh, why not like try and do a reprint of this or something?
Yeah. I think that's a good idea. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for doing our quick takes. This week, quick takes is brought to you by, I don't know. We don't have any sponsors this week, I guess. By All Might, because I am here.
I like it.
There we go.
My Hero Academia, if you want to reach out to us, you can reach out to us at fourtailspodcast@gmail.com. If you want us to sponsor the quick takes,
please. I'm sure they will.
If you can make that happen, Kat, I'll give you a cut of whatever we get.
Oh, I don't know if I can make it happen, Mal. All
right. Well, this has been a fun time. We appreciate you being up and doing this with us. We definitely want to make sure that people see and check out your book. So do you want to do one more shout out before we go, though, or one more sales
one more spiel. Yeah, go check out Beast and Snow. You just have to type in Beast and Snow on Kickstarter and find it, or it looks like it's in the comments as well. And go check it out if you like vampires and werewolves and action, sex, but story. Go check out Beast and Snow. We're really proud of the book. And you can follow me at Comic Uno on Twitter, I guess. Still there. I still on platform, but I'm also on Facebook, YouTube for comic. You can just find me at Comic Uno, most places.
Nice. All right. And Danny, where can we check you? Damn it, I flipped you, so you're now on this side. Where can we check you out?
Terrible. So you know the best place to find me is our website, fourthwallpros.com. If you want to find me on social media, it's at the Ace Blade on all social media platforms, even the Twitter X thing. Kyron, where can people find you?
You can find me at TaurusComics.com. I am on Twitter at Taurus Comics, Instagram also Taurus Comics, and TikTok. I'm trying to grow my TikTok group people there. Finally reached 5,000 followers, so thank you. Nice. I'm not at the 100,000 that Danny's at, but I'm getting.
I'm not at 100,000. No, I'm not even close.
You're at 94,000 last time I checked. That's close, damn it.
It's not. It feels a long way.
It feels a long way. All right, whatever. And please, if you haven't already, go to sawcomic.com. My Kickstarter, we're not even a week in, but we're more than 33% funded. So definitely appreciate everybody that supported it. This has been a roller coaster as usual, but I appreciate everybody's support, and I'll be on. Kyron just sailed right past me. I don't know what that means. We're talking about TikTok followers.
The TikTok followers.
Okay,
we're gonna get their fish. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. But yeah, check out sawcomic.com. Everybody that's already supported, thank you so much. And who do we have next week on the show? I don't even remember who's going to be on the show. That's my bad. I'm sorry. Next week, we are going to have Michael Watson from Freestyle Comics on the show. We'll know what we're talking about, but I'm sure it's going to be epic. But until then, sayonara, goodbye, and please, everybody, take care of yourselves.
Quick is trying to say.